Jayoradamata Hova Kunyabihari Jai Hurad Omadhava Kunyabihari Gopi Jana Palaba Kiribaradahuri Gopi Jana Balaba Kiri Barada Hori Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Panachari Yamuna Tira Panachari Jai Hurad Umadhuva Kunjabihari Jai Hurad Amadhuva Kunjabihari Gopijana Banaba Yidibadadahuti Gopijana Palaba Yidi Bhadadahuti Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Panachari Yamuna Tira Panachari Jai Hurad Umadhava Kunjavihari Jayurad Umadhava Kunjavihari Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parabhidhikacharya also Tera Satashi Shimad His Divine Grace Abhaya Chanana the Bhaktivedanta Gosami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Srila Huilas Thakur Ki Jai, Paran Saikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Dvaita Gadadha Sri Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopi Govinda Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturam Kijai Jagadadasami Kijai Yamunamai Kijai Srimati Talasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees, all glories the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, Om Agana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So as you see here, there's Srila Prabhupada sitting on his Vyasasan. Let me just... So, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we are going to continue with our Bhagavad Gita study. And so we'll put the Bhagavad Gita on the screen. We're reading from the second chapter right now in the Bhagavad Gita, beginning with text 23, as you see here. Let me just clear the screen so I can see everything. Okay, so again, we are talking about the eternality of the soul. And in this particular verse, we're going to hear about how the soul is not cut or burnt or anything like that. It's another very famous verse in the Gita. The first part of the second chapter is primarily distressing again and again and again. You don't die. You're eternal. You're not slain when the body is slain. The soul is eternal. It's unborn. It's primeval. Never dies. Again and again and again, you hear the same message from different angles of vision. So we will read this text here. So, Nainam chinanti shastrani noinam dahati pavakaha nachainam kledayantyapo na shoshayati marutaha. So, na never, a nam, this soul, shindanti can cut into pieces, shastrani weapons, na never, avam, a nam, sorry, this soul, dahati, burnt. Pavakaha, fire, na, never, cha, also, enam, the soul, kledianti, moistened, appaha, water, na, never, shoshayati, dries, maruta, wind. The soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind, because the soul is a spiritual entity. We are spiritual entities, and we can't be touched by matter. It's of a different category. Just like if you have some, all right, let's give a material example just to illustrate the point. Let's say you have something more subtle than the Panchamahabhuta. Then let's say more subtle than my body. Let's take something that we have experience of. Let's say a radio wave. Okay? A radio wave, you know, mobile phone wave that's in the air. You can't cut it with a weapon. You can't burn it with fire. You can't moisten a radio wave with water. And you can't wither the radio wave by the wind. So even something more subtle in this world cannot be affected by most of the gross elements. So what to speak of the far more subtle aspect of the self, which is the soul? It's not material. It's of a different category, completely different category. And just like Krishna is the cause of all causes, he's timeless. The soul is also timeless and part and parcel of Krishna. It's eternally coexistent with Krishna. It has no beginning and no end. So it's not that Krishna created the soul. And it's not that Krishna destroys the soul. The soul is eternally coexistent because we are part and parcel of Krishna. We're connected with Krishna. We're there in eternal time. See, if you think in terms of material time, then everything has a beginning and everything has an end. But if you think in terms of something transcendental to time, then there's no beginning, no end. And that's the soul. So many people project their understanding, the material understanding, their experience in this world, on the nature of the soul, but that is not proper because the soul is of a different category, something that they have not experienced yet in this lifetime. So Prabhupada comments that all kinds of weapons, swords, flame weapons, rain weapons, tornado weapons, etc., these are just a little side information. These are actually weapons. Some of these weapons are not like weapons that we've experienced in America or in the modern world, but these are like mantra weapons that were used in the Battle of Kurukshetra. They were flame weapons. You know, like even, of course, in modern-day war, they have the flamethrower like that. But we understand in the Mahabharata war, through mantras, they were able to destroy things. Through mantras, create flames. Through mantras, create entities to destroy the opposite side. So there's some, all sorts of things were going on there. It appears that there were many kinds of weapons made of earth, water, air, ether, etc., in addition to the modern weapons of fire. Even the nuclear weapons of the modern age are classified as fire weapons, but formerly there were other weapons made of all different types of material elements. We talked about that. Firearms were counteracted by water weapons, which are now unknown to modern science. Nor do modern scientists have knowledge of tornado weapons. Nonetheless, the soul can never be cut into pieces nor annihilated by any number of weapons, regardless of scientific devices. The Mayavadi. So, explain what a Mayavadi is again. Mayavadi, who says the Lord is material, the Lord's body is material, it's temporary, etc., like that, and therefore the soul is material, or the soul merges into the oneness, and we're all one. There's different types of Mayavadis. Cannot explain how the individual soul came into existence simply by ignorance and consequently became covered by the illusory energy. Let me turn my phone off so we don't get bewildered by people calling me. I usually forget to do that. So it's interesting. Let me just unpack that statement of Srila Prabhupada's. It says, the Mayavadi cannot explain how the individual soul came into existence simply by ignorance and consequently became covered by the illusory energy. Because they cannot explain what ignorance is. In other words, they say that ignorance covered Brahman. Brahman means the greatest, means spirit. And so they say that ignorance has covered Brahman. So that's kind of stupid, because that posits ignorance as more powerful than Brahman. And that is the fall of Shankaracharya's philosophy. Shankaracharya talks about how the Brahman was put into ignorance. Hare Krishna. It's called Vivarta in Sanskrit. And so he doesn't really explain where that ignorance came from. So if ignorance can influence Brahman, then ignorance is more powerful than Brahman. So then ignorance must be God. You know, it doesn't make sense. So he doesn't explain the source of that ignorance. So that's why Prabhupada is stating that. Nor was it ever possible to cut the individual souls from the original Supreme Soul. Rather, the individual souls are eternally, exactly what I said before, separated parts of the Supreme Soul. So we are eternally separated parts with the same nature as the Supreme Soul, Krishna. Because they are atomic, individual souls eternally, sanatana, they are prone to be covered by the illusory energy and thus become separated from the association of the Supreme Lord, just as the sparks of a fire, although one in quality with the fire, are prone to be extinguished when out of the fire. This is an example Prabhupada gave many times. You take a spark out of the fire, then it actually becomes extinguished. Put it back in the fire, and it becomes part of the fire. In the Varaha Purana, the living entities are described as separated parts and parcels of the Supreme. They're eternally so. There's the word eternal again. According to the Bhagavad Gita also. So even after being liberated from illusion, the living entity remains a separate identity, as is evident from the teachings of the Lord to Arjuna. Arjuna became liberated by the knowledge received from Krishna, but he never became one with Krishna. Now, this is another point. The Prabhupada keeps stressing this point of difference. We're different from Krishna, and of course, one and different simultaneously, beta, beta, tattva, but we're eternally an individual. And this contrasts with the Mayavadi, Brahmavadi, impersonal philosophy, which states something different, which most people think is Hinduism. Most people think, you know, Hinduism is that ultimately we merge, or become one, or become nothing. That's called Nirvishesha, actually. Shunyavadi. I got the term wrong. But that's not what the Vedic literatures teach. The Vedic literatures are the very foundation of Hinduism. So we find most people who teach Hinduism at the university and other places have not really read the Vedas or do not accept the Bhagavad Gita, the literal word of the Bhagavad Gita. They just give their own opinion. I mean, there's some very famous people, and I don't want to offend anyone, who previously came to America and spread Hinduism, and they had not even read the Vedas. They just had their concocted idea of what Hinduism was. But what the Vedic literature state is, Nicho Nichanam Chaitanas Chaitanam Eko Bahunam Yobadadati Kama. There's one supreme eternal, and there's many plural eternals. And we're that plural eternal. We are not that supreme eternal. Very important. Prabhupada keeps mentioning the point because that is a main point, or the main point of confusion that people have. Not only in Hinduism, but in Christianity, or in many other different religions, their confusion is, you know, ultimate realization means to lose one's identity and merge in the existence of God. Of course, sometimes in some religions, they think the ultimate religious experience is to go to heaven and enjoy with so many girls. Of course, they don't tell you what, you know, about those poor girls, how they happen to be there. But anyway, so, I mean, that's, it's quite interesting. And, of course, and then certain religions in America, they teach that your body will rise again and then you'll be with your whole same family, even with your dog will be there with you in God's abode. I doubt it. I mean, they may have dogs there, but you're not going to rise out of the grave and be there with your same family, unless your family is Krishna conscious, then you can. So in any case, there's many different misunderstandings of what liberation or becoming God conscious means. Text 24, another verse about the soul. Achedyo yam adayanjo yam akledyo shushna hevacha nicha sabagata stanur achalo yam sanatanaha achedyaha. Unbreakable, I am the soul. Athaya, unable to be burned, I am the soul. Akleja, insoluble, ashoshna, asosya, not able to be dried, eva certainly, cha and nicha, everlasting, sarvagata, all-pervading, stanu, unchangeable, achalaha, immovable, I am the soul, sanatanaha, eternally the same. So that sanatana is used again and again and again. Nicha also means eternal. Sarvagata, I'll explain it in a second. Translation, this individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble and can be neither burned nor dried. He is everlastingly, everlasting, present everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. So Srila Prabhupada explains that all these qualifications of the atomic soul definitely prove that the individual soul is eternally the atomic particle of the spirit whole, and he remains the same atom eternally without change. The theory of monism is very difficult to apply in this case. Monism means we're all one, because the individual soul is never expected to become one homogeneously. Homogeneously is like homogenized milk. It's just like one substance. When I was young, we used to buy milk that wasn't homogenized, and it would separate out. I mean, we get milk delivered and it would separate out the cream in the top and the liquid on the bottom, and you can actually make butter from it. So when they started homogenizing, milk became one. It became impersonal milk. And then, so in other words, the cream always remains separate from the rest of the milk. And it's not that there's some spiritual process by which we all become homogenized, like homogenized milk. Of course, we should become pasteurized. That means purified. So, anyway, after liberation from material contamination, the atomic soul may prefer to remain as a spiritual spark in the effulgent rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the intelligent souls enter into the spiritual planets to associate with the Personality of Godhead. I'll unpack that too. Sometimes people just don't want to have a personal relationship with God. I mean, they really are dedicated just to, let's say, merging or temporarily losing their concept of individuality. So there is this vast effulgence around the Supreme Lord, the halo. And in that effulgence, all these little spirit souls are floating. who really don't want to have a personal relationship, and they're like in a state of suspended animation. That means they're not conscious. They're, of course, not conscious means unconscious, and they have no feelings, and they're relieved of all pain, that's for sure, but they're also relieved of all happiness, which is not the constitutional position of the soul. The constitutional position of the soul is actually to be active. It's not natural for the soul. So in this particular case, eventually they pop out of that Brahmajyoti, that effulgence, and come back to the Earth planet or some other planet within the material sphere. So if people desire that, then they can go and merge. But they're not actually merging. It appears that they merge. And the example given in the Upanishads is that it appears that a green bird is merging when he goes into a green tree. And anybody who's been in India has seen these green parrots who go into green trees and they disappear because the tree is the same color as the bird. That is called camouflage. Just like soldiers, when they go into war, they wear a camouflage outfit, so they appear to merge into the forest because their very outfit has the same colors as the forest. So there's no actual merging, but if people really want to go there and for some time, let them go. But we want loving personal relationships. So the word sarvagata, all-pervading, is significant because there is no doubt that the living entities are all over God's creation. They live on the land, in the water, in the air, within the earth, and even within the fire. The belief that they are sterilized in fire is not acceptable. Whoops, please keep the phone off. Is not acceptable because it is clearly stated here that the soul cannot be burned by fire. Therefore, there is no doubt that there are living entities also in the sun planet with suitable bodies to live there. If the sun globe is uninhabited, then the word sarvagat, living everywhere, becomes meaningless. Now, that's a very difficult thing to try to understand because the sun is hot, very hot. And as you know, when you want to get rid of bacteria and other things, you boil the thing. I mean, even the coronavirus, if you were to put some virus into a pot and heat the pot up to 100 degrees centigrade, the virus becomes finished. Of course, you can't get rid of your virus if you have it by heating your body up to 100 degrees centigrade because you will be finished also. So the life that we experience in this world in general can't exist at such a temperature. However, recently scientists have actually gone down in the ocean, which they, I think, know less of than outer space. So they've gone down in the ocean and find these super hot steam vents coming out of the ocean floor. I mean, what I mean super hot, it's hotter than boiling temperature. Because water boils here at 100 degrees centigrade, 212 Fahrenheit. But when you put it under pressure, and so every something like 30 feet you go down, it increases with one atmosphere of pressure. One atmosphere means 15 pounds per square inch, for those of you who are scientifically inclined. And the reason I know that, because I used to scuba dive. And I had to learn about all these pressure things in the water. So when you go down thousands of feet into the water, the pressure is immense. So the temperature in those vents, you know, the boiling vents coming out of the ocean floor, I mean, who knows how hot they are? I mean, I don't know how hot they are. And there's living entities living there. So everywhere we look, there's living entities. There's living entities in snow. There's living entities in the air. I mean, even in the air right here in this room, hopefully nobody has the coronavirus, so there's no coronavirus entities here. But there's billions, trillions, unlimited microbes in the air. I remember the first time I learned chemistry or biology, and I would take a little sliver of my saliva out when I was a kid and put it in the microscope. I saw so many creatures, I mean, unbelievable creatures, and everybody knows about bed bugs and other creatures like that. So there's living entities everywhere. We may not understand how they're able to survive, but their bodies are acclimated to that particular environment and even the sun. That's why their soul is called sarvagata. That means you'll find souls everywhere because Krishna is a very efficient person. That means he's not going to waste space. The purpose of the material world is to house the criminal living entities. That's us. And if you have a prison, you only build the prison with as many rooms as you need. You're not going to build a prison with 10,000 rooms when you only have 10 criminals. So Krishna arranges the material world, and he expands the material world, and he creates more material universes at the time of creation to accommodate the needs. That's all. It's not that, you know, he's going to have one material universe that's going to be completely empty because, you know, I guess there weren't enough rebellious souls to fill it. He just wouldn't create that additional one. He's very efficient. He uses space efficiently. There's no wasted space. I mean, that's really the point of Sarvagata. So, let us continue. Text 25. Another verse about the soul. Avyakto yam achintyo yam avikaryo yam auchate tasmade vam viditvainam nanu shochitamarisi. Avyakta, invisible, I am the soul, achintya, inconceivable. I am this soul. Avikaryaha, unchangeable. Ayam, the soul. Uchite, is said. Tasmat, therefore, evam, like this. Viditva, knowing it well. Enam, this soul. Na, do not. Anushochitum, to lament. Arhasi, you deserve. Translation, it is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. That means can't be changed. Like mutation. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body. There's a famous one we use at funerals. Prabhupada explains, as described previously, the magnitude of the soul is so small for our material calculation that he cannot be seen even by the most powerful microscope. Therefore, he is invisible. As far as the soul's existence is concerned, no one can establish his existence experimentally beyond the proof of Shruti or Vedic wisdom. Wow. That's referring to epistemology. How do you know? How do you know what you know? So there's different types of proof. I mean, you can speculate, you can give a metaphor, like we talked about yesterday, but you can't really prove the soul using any material things. An example that I sometimes use in this regard is you can't prove the existence of radio waves just by material things other than a radio radio receiver. You have to have the right instrument. So the gross material elements are not correct instruments for perceiving the existence of the soul. Now, indirectly, yes, we can perceive the existence of the soul because we have consciousness. As I quoted from Descartes the other day, cogito ergo sum, I think or I feel, therefore I am. So I know that I'm a soul, but you really can't prove it in the same way. So the absolute proof is called shruti or shabda pramana. And that shruti or hearing, shruti means hearing, is done from the right authority. And the right authority is Krishna. Because no one else has the authority of Krishna because no one else is all-pervading. Like if someone says to you, for example, no one has seen God, then that just means they haven't seen God or they haven't met someone who's seen God. Because if they were able to make that statement that no one has seen God, and it was truthful, I mean, it couldn't be truthful. It's a self-negating statement, because then they would be God, because they would be all-pervasive. So that statement negates itself. When you say no one has seen God, that indicates basically that you know everyone or you know everybody's experience, and therefore you must be God because you're all-pervasive. So the statement itself contradicts itself, okay? We have to accept this truth because there is no other source of understanding the existence of the soul, although it is a fact by perception, which I just mentioned. I feel, therefore I am. I experience, I have consciousness, therefore I am. I know I'm conscious. Nobody has to tell me. There are many things we have to accept solely on the grounds of superior authority. No one can deny the existence of his father based upon the authority of his mother. Of course, this was in the Vedic culture where people knew who their father was. Maybe not in America. There is no source of understanding the identity of the father except by the authority of the mother. Similarly, of course, you also now have genetic testing. Similarly, there is no source of understanding the soul except by studying the Vedas. In other words, the soul is inconceivable by human experimental knowledge. The soul is consciousness, and consciousness that also is the statement of the Vedas, and we have to accept that. Unlike the bodily changes, there is no change in the soul. As eternally unchangeable, the soul remains atomic, infinitesimal, in comparison to the infinite supreme soul. The supreme soul is infinite, and the atomic soul is infinitesimal. Therefore, the infinitesimal soul, being unchangeable, can never become equal to the infinite soul or the supreme personality of Godhead. This concept is repeated in the Vedas in different ways just to confirm the stability of the conception of the soul. Repetition of something is necessary in order that we understand the matter thoroughly without error. That's why Krishna is repeating it. You are the soul. You are eternal. You'll never die. You're not cut into pieces. Whew. It's like a sledgehammer approach here. Another verse. Atha chainam nicha jatam nicham va manyase mritam tatapi tvam mahabaho nayanam shochitam arhatsi. Atha, if, however, cha also enam, the soul, nicha jatam, always born, nicham, forever, va, either, manyase, you so think, mritam, dead, let's see, I can't see the other thing there, tata, api, still, twam, you, mahabahu, O mighty armed one, nah, never, enam, about the soul, soshitum, to lament, arhasi, deserve. Translation, if, however, you think that the soul or the symptoms of life is always born and dies forever, you still have no reason to lament, O mighty armed. Now, this is an interesting philosophical statement. If you actually don't believe any of this stuff that I'm teaching you, then you still should fight. Because what matters anyway? When you're dead, you're dead. How many people you mistreat? Because you never existed. It's just like the soul is, there is no soul. It's just like the symptoms of life that come from an epiphenomena of matter. You put the body together, and somehow or other you get a soul there. And once you get this, not a soul, you get an appearance of consciousness. I mean, nobody laments if you pull the plug on your computer. I mean, I may lament if it's my computer. But nobody will get upset. Oh, you pulled the plug on your computer. The police arrive at your door. You have killed your computer. You are going to go to jail for the rest of your life for pulling the plug on your computer. From the artificial intelligence on your computer. Just like right now, I'm having one of the devotees work on artificial intelligence for me. He's really intelligent, one of my disciples here, Jagat Guru. And so I'm just amazed. Artificial intelligence. And this intelligence, he's doing some work for me to figure out when someone's on the webcam, where they are, and he's actually done it. I mean, I was shocked to see how he's done it. So if I just, like, erase the program, you know, just erase it. Who cares about a program? Just erase it. I'm sure he packed it up. He copied it. So if the soul is nothing but that, or if your consciousness is nothing like that, then who cares what you do? It doesn't matter. Nothing matters. Or, as the Epicureans say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. Or, as they say in India, Charvaka Muni said, beg, borrow, steal, but get yourself some ghee. In other words, it really doesn't matter as long as you don't get caught. You know, ethics, morality, you just throw them out the window. So this is, of course, a nasty philosophy. But Krishna is making the argument that even if you believe in this philosophy, you know, why don't you fight anyway? I mean, it doesn't really matter. And you shouldn't lament because, you know, these people, basically, there's no soul. And, you know, when you kill the body, they're gone anyway. And they never existed in the first place. It's just a machine. So he's giving Arjuna another argument here why he should fight. But Prabhupada explains here, there's always a class of philosophers almost akin to the Buddhists who do not believe in the separate existence of the soul beyond the body. When Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, it appears that such philosophies existed and they were known as the Lokayatikas and Vaivashikas. It's like atomism. Such philosophers maintain that life symptoms take place at a certain mature combination of material, a certain mature condition of material combination. The modern material scientists and materialistic philosophers also think similarly. According to them, the body is a combination of physical elements, and at a certain stage, the life symptoms develop by interaction of the physical and chemical elements. The science of anthropology is based on this philosophy. Currently, many pseudo-religions now becoming fashionable in America are also adhering to this philosophy, as are the nihilistic, non-devotional Buddhist sects. There are devotional Buddhist sects, too. I mean, Buddhism is multi-branched. So this is why Srila Prabhupada very much stressed that those of us who are scientifically inclined would attempt, not just attempt, but to actually undertake the process of proving that life comes from life, that life cannot come from matter. And I've done a number of presentations on that, showing the complexity of life and showing the impossibility that that complexity arose by chance, even utilizing, you know, genetics and the theory of evolution and all that other stuff. It's impossible. Life is so incredibly complex that there is not enough time in the whole span of the universe, considering every single atom, every single speck in the universe, for even the most simple life to have evolved. And that I can prove mathematically. That's a subject matter for another class, which we've given before here. So Prabhupada really stressed this. Life comes from life. It doesn't come from matter. Consciousness doesn't come from matter. Even if Arjuna did not believe in the existence of the soul, as in the Vaishnava philosophy, there would still have been no cause for lamentation. You know, if you don't believe in the soul, it doesn't matter. Why lament? You know, just as Prabhupada said here, no one laments the loss of a certain bulk of chemicals and stops discharging his prescribed duty. On the other hand, in modern science and scientific warfare, so many tons of chemicals are wasted for achieving victory over the enemy. According to the Vaibhashika philosophy, the so-called soul or atma vanishes along with the deterioration of the body. So in any case, whether Arjuna accepted the Vedic conclusion that there is an atomic soul, or he did not believe in the existence of the soul, he had no reason to lament. According to this theory, since there are so many living entities generating out of matter at every moment, and so many of them are being vanquished every moment, there is no need to grieve for such incidents. If there were no rebirth for the soul, Arjuna had no reason to be afraid of being affected by sinful reactions due to his killing his grandfather and teacher. In other words, he should just enjoy. What's, you know, there's no soul, no eternal soul, no karma, meow. Just kill whoever, you know, do whatever you have to do to maximize your enjoyment. And even your enjoyment's Maya anyway. But at the same time, Krishna sarcastically addressed Arjuna as Mahabahu, mighty arm, because he at least did not accept the theory of the Vaibhashikas, which leaves aside the Vedic wisdom. As a Kshatriya, Arjuna belonged to the Vedic culture, and it behooved him to continue to follow its principles. You know, so Krishna is like sarcastic, being a little sarcastic with Arjuna at this point. And this is the last verse we'll read today. Another verse about the soul. So many verses about the soul. If you're not convinced now, let's keep reading. Jatascha hi dhruvo mrityur dhruvam janmam ratascha cha tasmat aparihariye urte tatvam shochitumarhasi. Jatascha, of one who has taken his birth, he certainly dhruva, a fact, mrityuhu, death, dhruvam, it is also a fact, janma, birth, mrityascha, of the dead, cha, also, tasmat, therefore, aparihariye, of that which is unavoidable, arte in the matter, na do not, tuam you, sochitum to lament, odyssey deserve. One who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. So Prabhupada explains, one has to take birth according to one's activities of life, and after finishing one term of activities, one has to die to take birth for the next. In this way, one is going through one cycle of birth and death after another without liberation. This cycle of birth and death does not, however, support unnecessary murder, slaughter, and war. But at the same time, violence and war are inevitable factors in human society for keeping law and order. Haven't we seen that? The Battle of Kurukshetra, being the will of the Supreme, was an inevitable event, and to fight for the right cause is the duty of a Kshatriya. Why should Arjuna be afraid of or aggrieved at the death of his relatives since he was discharging his proper duty? He did not deserve to break the law, therefore becoming subjected to the reactions of sinful acts of which he was so afraid. By avoiding the discharge of his proper duty, he would not be able to stop the death of his relatives, and he would be degraded due to his selection of the wrong path of action. So in other words, by Krishna's will and by karma, these people were supposed to die. And so Arjuna was simply being advised to be an instrument to Krishna's will. So let's see, another thing about the verse, one who's taken birth is sure to die and after death. Okay, so here's the thing. That's another point I wanted to make. If we are assured of this and know that one who's taken birth is sure to die, one is going to die is sure to take birth again, it behooves us to make plans for the future. And Prabhupada would often give the example of one whose lease on his apartment, or what they call flat, is getting ready to run out. You make plans where you're going to go after that. That's common sense. So if we accept that, we should act in such a way that we at least get a better birth in the next life, if not become free from the cycle of birth and death. If we actually believe in it, it behooves us to take some remedial action. Remember, your lease in life is limited and quite short. Very short. And there's no guarantee how long the lease is. Imagine you have a lease on an apartment and the landlord says, I don't really know how long this lease is going to last. You know, I could decide at a moment's notice. Imagine it's on the paper. The landlord has a right at a moment's notice to kick you out of the apartment. Pretty bad lease. I don't think I would sign such a thing. But we actually have that sort of lease on this body. It doesn't belong to us. Even though we think it belongs to us, we have a right to do everything we want, whatever we want with the body. No. It belongs to Krishna. We're leasing it from Krishna. So we have a lease, and the lease says, at any minute, you may have to leave it. So I think we should take advantage of every minute in trying to make a plan as to what will happen in the future. On that happy note, we don't want to be depressed about death, but, you know, it's just part of life. It's a fact of life. So on that happy, happy note, we will take some questions to end the discussion. We'll go back to our screen, and I'll take you all off of mute. Give me 1 second. I have put everybody on mute, and you can't take yourselves off unless I allow you to take yourselves off. Okay, now you are allowed. So who has a question?
Hey, Gurudev, I have a question.
Oh, good. Please ask it.
So the previous shloka, you discussed the word Mahabahu.
Yeah, great arm one. That's Arjuna.
I was very in kind of non-literal kind of interpretation. That's like a sarcastic remark referring to the fact that, you know, whatever logic that Arjun has is somewhat distant because he's a Kshatriya. Is it kind of Mahabahu? Is it sort of a reference to Purusha Suktam, where, you know, the Kshatriya is kind of equated with the arm?
With the universal form? With the arms of the universal form, is that the question?
Kind of, you know.
I guess you could take it like that. Yeah, the Kshatriya is the arms of the universal form, and then the Brahman is the head, and the Vaishya is the good old stomach. The Shudra is the legs. Most of us like the stomach part. So, yeah, you could take it like that. And it's also a sarcastic reference by Krishna. You know, your mighty arm, but you're acting like a wimp here. Krishna's trying to... Krishna's actually trying to embarrass Arjuna. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
That, you know, you say you're so strong, you're mighty armed, and hey, you're acting like a Shudra or like someone who is just weak. So it's an insult. Insult, and sometimes you got to insult someone to get someone to do something. Psychology. All right.
Thank you
for the question. So who else has a question here? Nalini Kant? No?
Hare Krishna Gade.
Who's now? Who's speaking now?
Is Rishikesh Gade? Please accept my business.
Oh, Rishikesh. Oh, now I see your smiling face.
Gurudev, just a question about, I know I'm a soul, I mean, without any doubt. But that actual realization, you know, that really I'm really not part of this body, it takes such a long time to understand this, you know, just actual realization.
Yes, it does.
When is the point when you understand this, Gurudev?
Well, Prabhupada said action and knowledge gives realization. In other words, if you act like you're not the body, not to hurt the body, but, you know, take care of the body, then you'll realize it. But if you act like you are the body, you'll never realize it. So action and knowledge, it's like practice of anything. When you practice, then eventually you come to the realization. It's like when you practice, let's say someone's learning to play the piano, they practice the piano and later on it becomes spontaneous. So you practice as if you under the intelligence platform, as if you were actually fully realized. And then eventually, hey, you realize it because you please Krishna. You please Krishna by your faith. Faith is evidenced by action even though you don't feel like it. That's an evidence of faith. And the statement is, Yasya devi parabhaktir yata devi tatakuru, tashayate katitari arte prakashante mahatmana. One who has implicit faith in the spiritual master and faith in Krishna, the Vedic literatures, all the imports and purports of the Vedic literatures are revealed to one. So that's my answer.
Thank you, Guru.
Okay, thank you, Rishikesh. Who else has a question? One or two more questions, and then we'll have more.
I have one.
Oh, okay, Ayush.
This one sprung after Rishikesh Prabhu's question. So basically, how you were saying, when do we really understand when we are separate from the body, like when is that realization? So I got a question from your answer that when we gradually think that we are not this body, like we act as if, of course we take care of the body, but we act as if we're not this body, we develop that realization. So how to act that we're not this body?
How to act? Well, at least do your sadhana. You know, chant your rounds, and if things arise, let's say attractive things or disturbing things, like it's stated in the Nectar of Instruction, Vacho Vegam, Manasa Karota Vegam, Jiva Vegam, Udra Pasha Vegam, when different pushings arise from the words, tongue, belly, genitals, and all those other things like that, that you don't give in to them when they deviate you from Krishna consciousness. That's what it means to act like you're not the body. Because if I think I am the body, then right now, maybe instead of speaking to you about Krishna, I'll just go to sleep. Of course, I'm not tired, but anyway. But or I'll do something else, or I'll just go to the beach or something like that. So, I mean, right now, my age, there's not too many things I can do with my body. So, but, you know, there's a lot of, or if I act like I am the mind, then when I hear something, let's say if I hear about the latest Star Wars movie, I'll run to the movies right now. But because I know I'm not, and I know I have my duty for Krishna, then I'll do my duty in spite of what the mind and the body are saying, and without hurting the body or without causing mental disturbance. I'll do these things because I have faith. This is my goal in life. This is my duty. And I have faith that Krishna's right. So that's an evidence of our faith. Yeah. So that's what I mean. Not to succumb to the body urges, you know, positive, negative body urges, whatever it is. So hope that explains it. Thank you. Ayush, that was a great question. You are a real sage there. Wow. Child prodigy.
It's already so,
so who else has a question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Bol.
Hare Krishna
Maharaj. Good to see you.
Please accept my humble obeisances.
Jai, all glories Prabhupada.
Just a quick question. I heard you talk about how the scientific community talks about life coming from matter.
Right.
And you just mentioned something about it'll take a very long time, and you've done some mathematical computations on this, and maybe now's not the right time, but if you've done some work on it, I'd love to have it. You know, when you talk to the general population, you often get stuck into that sort of debate.
Okay.
And
why don't you ask me that question on WhatsApp or something like that, and I'll send you some links. Not of videos that I've done videos too, but I'll send you some links that have been done by scientists that explain this whole point.
Okay.
You know, I have some videos that I did, but, you know, I would think that, you know, scientists with PhDs who have studied the philosophy of science would be better able to explain it than me. So it's a proven fact using mathematical calculations, you know, probability. What we're talking about is probability theory.
Right.
That when you talk about the possibility, I mean, just to get a little more precise, possibility of life as we know it arising by chance within the span of the whole universe, through the whole universe, it's something like 10 to the minus 180 or something like that possibility, which means basically, and that's one cell developing.
Wow.
Because of the complexity. And anyway, send me a WhatsApp message and I'll send you some links on that.
Sure, Maharaj. Thank you very much.
But this is scientific. This is scientific based upon the mathematical analysis of the possibility of even one cell developing or even, let's say, one protein developing, because proteins are composed of many amino acids. So, I mean, it's scientifically shown.
Okay.
And I think one more question. Mr. Cohen has a question. Mr. Cohen?
Yes, Pradeep.
His name is Gopal. Yeah, there he is. Wow, you got a black background there. You look like Darth Vader.
I'm in my heart, I guess. you were just talking about grief, and Krishna was chastising Arjuna for grieving that which is not worthy of grieving. And yet we see also in our own acharyas, there is a song like Ye Anilo Prema Dana, where he's grieving the loss of association
of
the great Vaishnavas. So although we can philosophically understand that someone is not the body and that they have simply moved on to another destination, but when we are unsure of our destination and when we'll have an opportunity to take their association again, how do we deal internally with the grief that we feel by losing the opportunity to associate with those?
Well, that grieving, that's a good question. That grieving is actually purifying, because we're grieving not because of anything that is related with the body or the way that they satisfy our senses. We are grieving because we are losing that spiritual association, at least the Vapu aspect of that civilization association. Prabhupada explained that actually the Vaishnavas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained that Vaishnavas don't die. He reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. So, yes, we do appreciate the Vapu, or the physical association of Vaishnavas, and to grieve over that helps connect us more to the Vani association. So that grieving is actually a way to connect to the instructions or the guidance of the great personality. So that is bona fide grieving. So you can do that. So we have to end right now. Sorry about that. And just announce that there'll be some sort of Sunday program here next week. I mean, I'll be giving the talk again, and I'm not sure what time it's going to be next week based upon how we do it outside and what time we do it outside, and that's going to be discussed between Aditya Narayan Prabhu and Leela Shakti to discuss that later on, you know, the next day or two this week. So that'll be an outside program. We're going to do an open up and that, and there's going to be allowance for one or two people to do darshan at the temple of the deities at one time, but really no kirtans of everybody in front of the deities. It's actually quite dangerous because of the droplets, the micro droplets that are there. And then, as I mentioned at the beginning of this class, in Mumbai, we had like 30 devotees who just got the coronavirus because, you know, program in the temple. And many churches that opened up are, let's say, have rampant coronavirus in them right now because people were singing in public or together inside. So we'll be able to sing together. We'll be able to have kirtan outside. And so this is, we're doing this because of our concern for the safety of all the devotees. I mean, that's really important. We don't want to lose any Vaishnavas, and we don't want anyone to get sick. It's extremely important. So that's going to be next week. And as I said in the beginning of the class also, we ask you all to look at the last few days of interviews we did. The first one with Gauramani, then another one with a doctor about the coronavirus, and then another one today about raising children with Gopi Gita. So you'll find those quite interesting, as well as this continuing Bhagavad Gita discussion we're going to be having at 6 o'clock during the weekdays here every evening. We're reading the Bhagavad Gita and going slowly through the Bhagavad Gita, and by the time you finish, you'll really know the Bhagavad Gita well. And I'm really enjoying it, even though I have read the Bhagavad Gita innumerable times before. So now we're going to let Aditya Narayan Prabhu, who is our Sankirtan leader and president of the congregation and who is our inspiration, he is going to say a few words to us. Okay?
Hare Krishna. So I just want to thank Maharaj for the wonderful class, and also like thank Maharaj for this nice Bhagavad Gita reading. Every day it's nice to go through Bhagavad Gita, and Maharaj after each purport is actually giving such nice comments. So I want to mention that all this is on Maharaj's Facebook page for sure, but we are also uploading all this on SoundCloud. So you will have access to the entire SoundCloud, the entire Bhagavad Gita, starting from the first one. So we are working on that, and we'll be posting out the link for that soon. And otherwise, the announcements Maharaj already mentioned. We are thinking of plans for next week. So we'll keep you informed through our WhatsApp group and also our New Goloka email. So please keep a watch through the email and WhatsApp group, and we'll have more information for you there. And
And thank you all for joining us, and it's a pleasure to be associating with you all through any means, because it's actually a great blessing to be with Vaishnavas, even if we have to do it on the internet. So on that happy note, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Hari Bol.